Rob McGurk handed me an article from The Economist entitled, "Now is the Time to Say Goodbye." You may remember there's a song of that title, but this is a much more serious issue. It was about a disease called trachoma, which was robbing many people of their sight. Trachoma rarely hit the headlines because it was not a killer as such. Nevertheless, 1 million people were being blinded by it. The World Health Organization was aspiring to eliminate trachoma by 2020. But what particularly exercised Rob McGurk's mind was the fact that Australia was the only developed country where trachoma was still prevalent in Indigenous communities. Together with Kerry Kornhauser, Joseph Ebbage, Kate Strain, and Murray Verso, Rob set up a DGR status organization called Nourish Our Children as a vehicle for supporting the many stakeholders who were already involved in trachoma elimination. And in particular, garnering the support of Rotary clubs throughout Australia as a centenary project. For our part, we have a memorandum of understanding in place with Nourish Our Children, and we will hear more about their broader work shortly. In the meantime, inspired by the notion of helping to end trachoma by 2020, our own club has been busy over recent months on a really exciting and practical trachoma water trailer project that I would invite past president Peter Rogers to tell us about. Peter.
Thank you, Robert. Thank you for that delightful introduction, and it's a great pleasure for me to have the honour of speaking to the club about our own club initiative to help eliminate trachoma by 2020. Just to give a little more background on trachoma, to build on what Rob has said, trachoma is the world's leading infectious cause of irreversible blindness. And it exists mainly in Indigenous communities. It disappeared from Melbourne and virtually all of Australia's cities and towns over 100 years ago. But when our house was built in 1887, it was quite a common cause of blindness in Melbourne. But for 100 years, it hasn't been in Melbourne. And as Robert says, we remain the last developed country in the world where this disease is considered endemic. It persists in about 15 outback Indigenous communities. And it does so where living conditions are inadequate and there's a lack of functional maintained washing facilities and where homes are chronically overcrowded. And what actually happens is that amongst children, it gets passed very easily, particularly when they are sleeping under a blanket or sharing accommodation when they land in a house in a community. And it's frequent reinfections that damage the eyelids and the eyelashes and cause irritation on the surface of the eye that causes blindness. Hugh Taylor, who's an honorary member of our club, Professor Hugh Taylor, is the Professor of Indigenous Eye Health at the University of Melbourne. And his team, and we have Fiona Lang and Emma here today representing them, have been enormously helpful to our club in getting this initiative off the ground. when one works in Indigenous communities, a key issue is having credibility to do a project, social license, if you like. Nobody can just walk in and say, we've got this great idea, we've come to help you. We have to be wanted, and it has to be seen as relevant. And Hugh and Fiona and Emma are the people who've enabled us to have that welcome into Indigenous communities. And also for Rotary, sustainability is an important issue with all of our projects. Everything we do has to meet the sustainability test. So when we deliver our water trailer, which we've produced, we've got to be confident that it can continue to be operational, can be fixed, and that it will do what it was designed to do. And again, our friends from the Melbourne University Eye Health Group will be able to help us with that. Hugh Taylor, I think, was behind a survey in 2008 which showed that by the age of 40, Indigenous adults had 6 times as much blindness as non-Indigenous people. 6 times. And that was despite that when Indigenous kids start off life, they have better sight than the rest of us. So this is indeed a serious problem. And our club, as Robert mentioned, has taken this on as one of our centenary projects to help eliminate trachoma by 2020. Our project involves the design of a trailer that can be taken to sporting events and other big community events in Indigenous communities in the areas where trachoma is endemic. And fundamentally, it's a game, a mobile game that's been designed by students from the Faculty of Engineering at Monash, such that young children of varying age, we're trying to attract them from about 3 up to 13, will be attracted in by this game and will want to play it. And it's a game that encourages skill in the memorising of patterns and responding by hitting buttons. And at the end, you get hit with a squirt of water. And of course, that's the function of this, to get their faces wet and cause them to have clean faces at the end of it. Monash University has been a key partner. They're a corporate member of our club, and I'm delighted today that we have Madeline McManus and Mark Pitsey here, who've been very supportive to us in providing the student team that are working on this project. This is the third time that Monash University has supplied us with a team of students to work on Rotary Club of Melbourne projects. The other project being the Barra Water Project, in which the team actually went to the Philippines. This is Brian Horwood's project. And the other one is David Beanland's project on adolescent arthritis, creating a virtual community of adolescent arthritis sufferers so that they can communicate and learn about dealing with the adolescent arthritis. And in fact, with this project, with the Mighty project for trachoma, this is the second time, because Madeline organised a team last year that was paid for by Telstra. Part of it paid also by Monash, and this year the cost has been totally met by Monash University. I'd also like to recognise Madeline, your contribution to this. Madeline's program is an award-winning program that won the Financial Review Industry Engagement Award last year. Could you stand, Madeline, so that we could thank you? Thank you. The water trailer has now been built. The manufacturer in Geelong was chosen, North Geelong, to build this. For those of you who are interested in the detail, the trailer can hold 1,000 litres of water, that's a tonne of water. And Madeline and I towed it back from Geelong last week, full of water, which surprised me. So that's quite a heavy load, but it handles well. It's got a very heavy duty suspension, which is designed for the roads that it'll travel on in Central Australia. It's got hydraulic brakes, it's got a handbrake, and the water, the 1,000 litres, is sufficient for one day's operation. And as I mentioned, it'll probably be used at AFL football events and other gatherings where big crowds come in from the communities. It's fitted with a lot of lockers and doors so that footballs and blankets and other things that are needed can also be carried. And on the rear, there's a faucet for filling water bottles and for drinking water. It's designed so that the buttons are proximity switches, like when you cross the lights. So you don't actually, the child doesn't have to touch the button, they just have to put their hand in front of it or across it and it will activate. And this is of course designed so that they won't use the buttons to transmit the infection between them. So what's coming up now? This week it's being demonstrated at the University of Melbourne. And Fiona tells me that it's going to be demonstrated at an environmental health conference in Melbourne. And the participants, we're not quite sure where it'll be. It'll probably be at the hotel where the conference is happening. And all of those participants will see it. We've been involved with one of the water companies in the Yarra Valley. They are keen to see it. And then the following week, it will go on its way up to Central Australia, where it'll be handed over to a particular person, Steffi Rainbow, of the Ngumpa Health Council, a destination organised by Fiona and Emma. This health council have about 50 vehicles already, and we believe that they're a suitable group to be able to maintain and repair this unit. They have electricians and whatever. So in terms of what happens after that, if it's successful, we're hoping that we'll be able to do more. We'll look for more sponsors and bring them into the project. We're already in discussion with the Australian Institute of Mining and Metallurgy, which is celebrating its 125th anniversary this year, and possibly we can bring mining companies into the project. So I'd like to just finish by saying that your club is doing something very exciting here. We're very optimistic about this project, and we believe that it will help in the overall effort to eliminate trachoma from Australia. Thank you, Robert.
Thank you very much, Peter. That gives you a very clear view on the club's project and this wider issue of helping to end trachoma. And it's with great pleasure that I welcome Past District Governor Dr. Murray Verso to come and introduce to us Lien Trinh, who's going to update us on the wider Rotary and Trachoma project in Australia. Murray.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Robert. Good afternoon, everyone. On behalf of the Trachoma team, I'd like to begin by acknowledging the traditional owners of the land on which we meet today, the Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nation, and I pay my respects to their elders both past and present. Before I introduce Leanne, I would like to thank the board of the Rotary Club of Melbourne on behalf of District Governor Peter Frew for the generous way you are supporting Detective Senior Sergeant Anthony Mercer, who leaves for New Orleans tomorrow as part of the ambassadorial program we have for people working in the areas of family violence. It's a very generous offer by your club, and we look forward to hearing what Anthony has to say when he reports back to the club in July. As you've heard, 3 years ago, the Rotary Club of Melbourne resolved to make the goal of ending trachoma in Australia a centenary project. To the club's enormous credit, it has done this in two ways. Firstly, by developing the excellent water trailer project that Peter's just been talking about, and secondly, by your magnificent support of the National End Trachoma 2020 project. This project is designed to engage all Rotary clubs in Australia in the run-up to the centenary of Rotary in Australia. It is a project that is endorsed by District 9800. It has been endorsed by Rotary International President Ian Risley and the Australian Zone Director Noel Travascus, who both recommend it as a project that all Australian Rotarians should embrace. Of the 21 Rotary districts in Australia, 16 of them now have what we call End Trachoma Champions, and they relate to the clubs and Rotarians in their district promoting the cause. So far, approximately 30 clubs around the country have made significant financial contributions to the project. And we meet with our district champions online using the facilities at the Rotary Club of Melbourne office at least once a month to share ideas and to hear about their activities. As you've heard, the program is managed by NOC, Nourish Our Communities. Rob McGuirk, Kerry Kornhauser and I direct the End Trachoma project, and Sandy Fulcher, who is also here today, is employed part-time as our project manager. During the 2016-2017 Rotary year, the Rotary Club of Melbourne generously donated $34,000 to the project. This enabled NOC to employ Lien Trinh to act as the End Trachoma Project Coordinator. A private foundation now assists with funding her crucial ongoing involvement. Lien is well known to many of you in this club because in 2013 you sponsored her to receive the inaugural District 9800 Rotary Foundation Global Scholars Grant, which enabled her to study for a Master of Public Health at the London School of Hygiene and Tropical Medicine. Lien also holds a Bachelor of Optometry from the University of Melbourne and a Master of Optometry from the University of New South Wales. She has worked providing eye care services and building local eye care capacity in a variety of settings, both internationally and throughout Australia. She has also worked with your distinguished club member, Professor Hugh Taylor, at the University of Melbourne's Indigenous Eye Health Unit. To tell us more about the Trachoma project, would you please welcome Lien.
Thank you, Murray. Thank you. A bit shorter. President Mary, President-elect Rob, Rotarians and guests, it's always an honour to address the Rotary Club of Melbourne, a club very close to me, and I thank you for inviting me to speak today. In late 2016, the Rotary Club of Melbourne sent me on a mission to investigate whether Rotary in Australia had a place to support the elimination of trachoma in Australia by 2020. And the findings were very clear. Dr. Anthony Solomon from the World Health Organization pointed out that trachoma exists in some of the poorest places among the poorest people. And it is among some of our poorest people where trachoma still persists, outbush in the remote communities of Australia. The last surveillance report in 2017 shows about 150 communities still at risk of developing endemic trachoma. This is great improvement from its peak since data started being collected of about 240 communities back in 2010. Rates of trachoma have dropped dramatically because of public treatment of trachoma through antibiotics, mass antibiotic distribution, and surgery. Back in 2010, the average rate of trachoma in some of the communities was 1 in 5 children. Now that rate has dropped to just over 5%. Great work has been done to reduce the prevalence of trachoma, but we need to work harder. We need to work harder in prevention, and we need to work more actively in the public health interventions of the SAFE strategy, that is the facial hygiene and environmental improvement aspects. Great work does continue and is ongoing by communities, by government and non-government bodies. We're starting to see some really great collaborative efforts in the fields of education, health and housing. Our own work at End Trachoma by 2020 is built on supporting strong community engagement and growing relationships. We're establishing and developing trust of the Rotary brand. And this trust needs to be developed by Indigenous Australians. In guiding our work in this space, my friend and advisor, mentor, chair of the Indigenous Health Equity Unit, Kerry Arabina, in her words, has advised us. The first thing you need to do is listen and cultivate the relationships that engender the trust and respect. What Rotary can do in this space is to think about what it means to be my fellow Australian. So we did that. We put our ear to the ground and listened to the voices of the community. You've heard from Peter about one project to improve facial cleanliness among children where the infection is most likely to spread. As a pilot project, it has fantastic potential. It's great potential for success because it was requested, it's wanted by the communities. It's engaging, it's got this great practical aspect to it. And it's about providing potable water to the communities in a way that is culturally appropriate and suitable for them. It's mobile. So congratulations, Peter and the Mighty team, for getting this off the ground. I've been on the journey with you for some of the process. And I look forward to continuing to observe and receive feedback and monitor the project with you. Now, when Rob McGurk and I visited the APY land some 18 months ago, we listened to many community voices and they were discussing issues that were important to their families and their lives. And we saw how endemic poverty was affecting their lives. There was real poverty out there. How many families lack the very basics, linen, towels, even cupboards and hooks to store these items? And we know that when these cases happen in urban Australia, there are entities which can support people in these situations, the Brotherhood of St. Lawrence, St. Vinny's, the Salvos. Not the case out in remote communities. People adapt, they're forced to. They live without and they suffer quietly and naively, this new norm is accepted. But we're currently in the process of mobilising items from DIK, donations in kind, and Bunnings, and sending them to places to meet these acute needs. Some items are really simple, towels and blankets. Suitcases and bags have also been requested by families out there just to store these items in their home. Towel hooks to hang bath towels. Very basic things that we take for granted, which we don't even consider, despite these being essential to our lives, contributing to our own hygiene and health. Now, among other things that we observed was the absence of mirrors. Mirrors at community facilities, mirrors at schools, mirrors in people's homes. There were none. It's a tool that we very much take for granted in our own homes. And it can be a very powerful tool to provide the visual cues needed for self-determination for behavioural change to occur. That is, I'm looking in the mirror. I see myself, I see the visual cues that I need to wash my face. I go and decide for myself that my face needs to be cleaned, and I do it myself. It's very powerful. It's empowering to have such a tool. It's empowering to be told, to not be told what to do. So Stefan Reinauer, who Peter mentioned before, a long-standing and trusted community officer, was very optimistic about the use of these acrylic mirrors. He had 20 packs trialled in the APY lands in family homes, and the feedback has been extraordinary. Families wanted more mirrors installed in their homes. The mirrors were acrylic, they were safe, they were light, they were easily transportable to all these remote regions. The self-adhesive backing on them made installation a breeze so that no technical person was required to mount these mirrors. And even the dental health teams were ecstatic. There was a request for more. And so today we've delivered and met the request of the APY lands, 300 mirrors in total so far. And we've delivered 1,000 mirrors to the Western Australian Environmental Health teams who have requested these mirrors on behalf of their community. And the request for mirrors continues in all states and territories affected by trachoma, Northern Territory, South Australia and Western Australia. Now, we've always worked closely with the Australian Trachoma Alliance, but this year we have officially become part of the Australian Trachoma Alliance. It's chaired by the former Governor-General, Major General Michael Jeffrey. We work very closely with the program implementation managers. And the pilot projects that you may have heard of, which have been led by a couple of Indigenous women, Gwen Troutman-Weir and Leslie Martin, are the portable washing machines, the chamois for kids in schools, and also the soap making workshops that provide a really great platform where hygiene and health can be discussed. These are currently being evaluated, and as they say, different horses for different courses. Some communities find portable washing machines really useful. Other communities have asked for something that's more robust, heavy duty, and suitable for their own needs. So we're working, and this is, I think, the really powerful part of our project, we're working and tailoring our solutions to individual community needs. Now, how do we ensure sustainability? Well, I think firstly we need to meet the acute basic needs of these poor populations out there who, and once we're able to meet these needs, we can then ask them to aspire to be better versions of themselves and ask them to do it on their terms. So regarding housing, health and maintenance, we have data to show that in 91% of cases, the reasons that damage occurs in homes is because of routine wear and tear, because there was poor initial construction of the homes, or there was an inappropriate product that was installed in the homes which isn't suitable for these remote communities. So this means that if the shower stops working, if the toilet malfunctions and waste can't be removed, homes being remote wait days, weeks, months, often longer, just for a fix to occur. So how can we make houses in the remote bush setting work more often than not? And I say we want to do this through self-determination and empowerment. I can tell you that our current system is failing. 37% of homes surveyed in one community did not have a functioning shower. This means that their shower rose might have been broken, they didn't have access to hot or cold water, or the shower wastewater could not be drained properly. So what are we doing? We're currently building partnerships to build local capacity in communities. We want this figure of 37% to be zero and remain so. Our partnership would work to develop the skills and capacity of the locals so that they would know how to fix their own homes, that skill would remain in community, and they would be able to do it on an ongoing basis rather than wait for an external contractor to arrive someday. Now, on the other end of this machine has been our work to engage Rotary across Australia. And we have had to convince Rotarians in Australia that our project was a worthwhile project to support. We want this to be the centenary project to support. And as Dr. Murray mentioned, we now have 16 Rotary districts in Australia engaged in our project, meeting monthly. And we want to integrate also the current projects that existing clubs work on, the current Indigenous projects that other clubs are working on, because we need to all collaborate together. Now, we hosted a live Facebook series earlier this year to inform and raise awareness about the project. And if you've missed it, then it's still on our website and on our Facebook page. Now, as you can imagine, this project has not been without its challenges. But I hope you'll agree that we have found a really significant place for Rotary in Australia in history. And in the words of President Ian Riseley, one where we can make a difference. Thank you.